Welcome to the Coin Podcast Network.
So here we are, late summer 2021, and over the last year, the Portland area and most of the Pacific Northwest has seen a 100-year wildfire season,
helicopters are dropping water on the white,
a generational ice storm,
90,000 customers are still,
and a heat wave that shattered records.
63 deaths can likely be attributed to that.
For me, and a lot of you, those events hit home. Every few months, stark reminders that something is changing about our weather.
You or someone you know lost power, at least once.
An entire region got buried in a blanket of bad air that was dangerous to breathe.
A lot of people died.
Hundreds of people died.
116 Oregonians have now died as a result of the state's recent...
The climate is changing. Whether the shift in our weather can officially be blamed on human-caused global warming or natural environmental variability remain points of contention and heated debate. A debate that won't be held on this platform. At least, not in this project. Climate change is not up for debate. It is a fact.
This record-breaking temperature
and limbs
heat
just toppled
it
to the
continues
ground
to threaten thousands
They've
of
taken
buildings
at least four lives.
For all intents and purposes, this town is gone.
And while we may not be able to blame climate change alone for causing more extreme weather, the evidence is clear. It is not helping. And it is getting worse.
And it is getting worse.
Oregon City extending its state of emergency declaration until mid-March.
When you factor in a strong wind and then ongoing dry conditions, it really makes
That's a real change from 20 years ago.
I think Mother Nature is very mad at humans.
So we're going to go on a journey. A journey to examine the weather events of the recent past.
You know, these small decisions that we all make in our day-to-day lives, they do really have consequences. They have impacts. They add up.
The groundbreaking research of the present.
You can pretty much rule out a lot of things that are not caused by humans.
And a journey to try and understand how everything is going to change in the near and distant future.
It gives me hope that policymakers continue to try to turn this around.
Along the way, we hope to provide you with a look at how we got here and the historical context of what is actually going on.
There's more energy in the atmosphere, we know that, and that is going to cause more extreme weather.
We'll take a look at what is happening and what will inevitably continue.
The crises we're going to be facing from climate change are really going to balloon and intersect with other crises.
And there's some scary stuff there.
Like end of days kind of scary stuff.
What climate change is contributing to is basically an increased frequency, duration, and severity of these extreme events.
But there's also opportunity with adaptation. And the potential, through mitigation and the decisions we make now, to forever alter the path of human evolution.
Humans are really good at turning even tragedy into a profit-making opportunity.
I'm Ian Costello. Join us as the Coin Podcast Network goes beyond the headlines to take a first-of-its-kind look at a climate in crisis.
A climate in crisis.
Climate change is going to affect most uses of land, and it's going to affect what uses are feasible in what areas.
What's the use of having developed a science well enough to make predictions if in the end all we're willing to do is stand around and wait for them to come true?
It's not that the process itself is alarming to someone like me who studies this. It's the rate at which it's occurring that's alarming.
My name is Kelly Bairn, and I'm the morning meteorologist at Coin6 News.
Okay, Kelly, here we are again, back for episode 2 of our series on climate change. And I think it's probably a good idea to kind of give a bit of a synopsis of what came in our first episode, because a lot of those themes are going to come up over and over.
Ian, we dove pretty deep into each of our extreme weather events from last year, the wildfires and those firestorms, the February ice storm, and our June heat dome when Portland reached the all-time record high of 116 degrees. Our experts explained to us that climate change isn't causing these extreme events, at least not alone, but it is certainly making things much worse. And I think the biggest takeaways from our early discussions are pretty simple. Climate change is real. The Earth is getting warmer. Extreme weather is getting more extreme. And carbon emissions from humans are the biggest drivers of it.
I want to drill down on that point before we go much further. Climate change is here, and we need to deal with it now. Our behavior is making things worse.
And we're the ones that are going to suffer. One of the experts we talked to for the second episode is Erica Fleischman, the director of the Oregon Climate Change Research Institute at Oregon State University. We asked her, like we asked all of our experts, what concerns her the most about climate change?
That a lot of people are going to suffer over the coming decades. As we've seen in the Northwest, mortality from extreme events is high and is likely to increase. A lot of climate extremes have really negative effects on human physical health and human mental health. I mean, if we look worldwide and we see spikes, for example, in suicides in areas where farmers have been affected by drought and can't feed their families and are losing their economic options, or people who are displaced or communities that are broken apart by extreme events that are climate related. In the next couple decades or longer, the level of human suffering is something that concerns me personally.
So we know climate change is real. We know that there's going to be suffering because of it. We know that there's going to be a price to pay for the carbon we are putting into the atmosphere. Kelly, as we look at all the things that climate change is causing, what are we supposed to say to the detractors who say, sure, there's a bad heat wave that killed some people? Or maybe they say, sure, rising sea levels force some people to move away from the coast, but it's not that big of a deal.
Well, I think folks who think that way just can't open their eyes to the bigger situation and see outside of their own perspective or experience, because it is a big deal. Climate change is going to change everything. When you think about those rising sea levels or heat dome events or massive wildfires, or most importantly, rising temperatures, you might not understand how they can affect you, especially in the short term. But listen to the way Randy Bluffstone, a professor in economics at Portland State, explained one of the major ways it is going to matter to everybody.
A survey by New York University of a bunch of economists, and more than three quarters of these economists thought that the global warming is going to have long-term negative impacts on the growth of the global economy. What this group estimated was that by probably within 5 years, those global, just the market costs, are about going to be about $4 trillion. And then as warming kind of accelerates, then that's going to go up to $50 trillion by 2075. You know, the dollars in the future are not, they're not equivalent to those now. But just to give an idea of scale, what $50 trillion is, it's the GDP of the top eight countries in the world, the US, China, Japan, India, Germany, France, et cetera. All these economic powerhouses, you add all those up, and that's what $50 trillion are. 2075 is in the future, and they're not fully comparable. But these damages, just on the market side, are estimated to be really high. Droughts, floods, extreme weather events, you know, our heat dome that we experienced. Who would ever have imagined that Portland would see a 116 degrees, that's going to have big effects. It's hard exactly for me to predict, but these are very, very serious impacts, you know, and frankly, effects on firms and industries and so forth, very important, but those effects are going to be way broader than that if we let this run amok.
And that's the point of this second episode of our series. There are industries, a lot of industries, that are caught in the climate change crossfire now. The resources they rely on are at great risk, and these are industries that could really be in trouble.
For the sake of our project, we're going to take a dive into a pair of industries that rely almost exclusively on natural resources, and they are a big business here in the Pacific Northwest. We're talking about timber and agriculture, both of which are racing to deal with the reality of a changing climate and the damage that is happening and will continue to happen with rising temperatures.
We're going to get into the economic impacts of climate change on those industries. But before we do, when it comes to the timber industry specifically, we do need to address something that is top of mind for a lot of people around here, and that is the role of climate change in destroying valuable forest land by increasing the occurrence and impact of wildfire.
For that, we turn to the third expert you will hear from in this episode, and it's a familiar voice from the first.
Yeah, my name is Solomon Dabrowski. I'm a professor of forest landscape ecology at the University of Montana.
I talked to Solomon a few weeks ago from his office in Missoula, Montana, while they were dealing with lots of smoke from fires in that area. Because we're going to have this conversation about economies and industries that rely on natural resources that are threatened by continued climate change, I asked him to explain how climate change specifically makes fires more catastrophic.
Do you believe there is a direct connection between climate change and the increase in both the number of acres burned annually and the intensity of these fires?
Yeah, the science is quite clear. Climate change enables for the climate to support drier fuels over large expanses of these landscapes, and consequently, it extends the fire season. Those are the two kind of major vehicles in which climate change is acting on the fire effects that we see. When we extend the fire season, you are invariably going to see more area burn. Additionally, the component associated with fire severity, as you dry those fuels out, you allow for a more rapid expansion of fire growth and more extreme fire behavior, and that's going to result in more severe fire effects. Climate change acts as an accelerant or a threat multiplier. Wildfire is a prime example of that. Climate change basically has set the stage. Climate change and a century of fire suppression has set the stage for the events that we're seeing now, in which fires basically are burning at really high severity. They're burning in ways that basically are burning massive holes into our forest landscapes. And so when I make the statement that climate change acts as a threat multiplier, it's doing just that. It's taking a process that naturally occurred on this landscape, a process that was self-maintaining, that kept things in check. That combined with our active fire suppression efforts has basically resulted in this accelerant of the destructive power of fire as a process in Western forests. The most destructive fires tend to be driven by these extreme weather events. We saw that last year with the basically downslope eastern winds that we experienced both in the Pacific Northwest as well as California. And I tended to be talking about fire and these disasters as being climate enabled. And that latter part is really where climate change kind of plays its role. By having warmer conditions, by extending drought, you basically set up these conditions in which your fuels dry out and it extends the fire season.
So here we are again, Ian, at one of these points that really hit home in the first episode. Climate change is not causing forest fires. Solomon is saying fire is good. Fire helps forests regenerate. But what you need to hear is that climate change is taking something that should be naturally occurring and healthy and turning it into these giant, terrible firestorms that don't help forests. They destroy them.
And the thing is, Kelly, it's not just fire. Solomon explained how climate change is putting our forests at risk in a variety of ways, some of which came as a surprise to me. And along with what is happening, it is the speed with which it is happening that has him the most concerned.
So redistribution of organisms is one that, you know, I tend to focus on in some of my research. Forests are dynamic. But the scale at which the dynamic, we're not really attuned to, because trees are long-lived organisms. And so you have to really go back deeper in time to understand how forests have changed over millennia. So climate change is kind of accelerating. It's accelerating the rate at which we're seeing changes in the composition of our forests. So different species are showing up in places that we previously wouldn't expect. Additionally, climate change, because of its effect on increasing the heat and aridity of Western landscapes, is limiting our capacity to reforest. And so as we experience more and more days with these dramatic temperatures, with dry soils, the temperatures right near the soil surface can be 140, 150 degrees Fahrenheit. A tree seedling needs to be able to make a living there. And increasingly in places that are increasingly hot and dry, they're not able to do so. And so that will affect the ability of forests to regenerate and the ability of forests to basically remain on these landscapes. And so one of the possible effects of climate change that we're seeing early evidence of is that we may lose forest in places that we traditionally had forest, and we may instead be getting grasslands or shrublands instead. And so it's not that the process itself is alarming to someone like me who studies this. It's the rate at which it's occurring that's alarming. So climate change, you know, as I noted before, is going to catalyze and accelerate shifts that have always occurred. The species that exist in our forest, and I'll talk specifically about trees because I study the biogeography of trees, they've always moved around. When we look at the distribution of tree species around the Western U.S., the things that we see here today were not here tens of thousands of years ago. Distribution of plants across the Western U.S. is dynamic through long time frames. What climate change is doing is it's accelerating the rate at which those natural processes of kind of reshuffling of biological communities, it's accelerating the rate at which that's occurring. That is facilitated by fire, a disturbance agent, which really catalyzes those changes. And our capacity as a society to adapt to those changes is being challenged because of the rate at which it's occurring. This year in particular, what we've seen is this vast expanse of drought and heat events that have occurred that have really opened our eyes into what extreme events can look like. And it's not that we haven't had extreme events in the past. It's just that we're seeing that these changes seem to be accelerating and their effects on biological communities are accelerating as well.
Toward the end of our conversation about the threat climate change poses to forests here in the Pacific Northwest, something else came up. Something that I feel should really hit home, because this isn't just about timber or just about fire. It's about drought and the water we all drink.
The drought that we're seeing across Western landscapes is really dramatic. Increasingly, communities around the West are concerned about the security of their water supplies. Well, mountains and forests are pivotal to maintaining water supplies in communities in the Western U.S. And we're increasingly going to be asked as resource managers, as well as the broader scientific community, to manage forests to support that water supply, because the trajectory that we're heading on is one in which we're going to expect to see more drought.
When we come back, we've got more on how climate change is threatening important industries here in the Pacific Northwest, and break down how the way we use the land is already being forced to change.
Hi, this is Jeff Giannola from Coin6 News, and I'd like to invite you to watch Coin6 News at 10 on Portland CW. It's our award-winning newscast, 1 hour earlier at 10 o'clock. A full hour of the stories that are important to you and your family from the news team that's watching out for you. Plus, Portland's most accurate forecast certified by WeatherRate from Chief Meteorologist Natasha Stenbach. See why more people are switching to Coin6 News at 10 on Portland CW. Watching out for you.
The Coin6 weather team has the most accurate forecast in town, certified by WeatherRate. Coin6 weather, watching out for you.
Ian, a lot of the times when you try to explain climate change and the effects of climate change to people, it can be tough. It's difficult to see on a short-term basis. Sure, we can feel record heat, we can see the smoke from big fires, but the biggest thing we know that climate change is causing is the constant, continuous rise in global temperatures. And a few degrees warmer over the course of 2 or 3 or 4 decades is tough to see.
You're right, Kelly, but you can see it on the land. I grew up in Montana. I know a lot of farmers and ranchers and loggers. They like to say they make their living off the land. I can tell you that we can all look at the land where they make that living and see that things aren't right. That drought Solomon Dabrowski was talking about before the break is fueling beetle infestations that are turning millions of acres of our forest land into brown, dead trees. You can talk to any farmer, and they'll tell you rising temperatures are adversely affecting crop yields. Farmers and ranchers from the Canadian to the Mexican border are fighting over access to water.
People who don't have as much access to water and who live in places where the growing season is becoming hotter and drier, you know, they're going to have fewer options than someone who has more access to irrigation water.
These are real negative impacts of climate change, and we are seeing them unfold in real time.
And that brings us to something Director Erica Fleischman from the Oregon Climate Change Research Institute had to say about how climate change is going to alter the way we use land to make a living.
Climate change is going to affect most uses of land, and it's going to affect what uses are feasible in what areas, and it probably will affect the magnitude or intensity of those uses or what can be obtained from those uses.
I think we need to focus for a second on the point Erica just made. Not only is climate change altering what we can do with the land, there is concern that continued climate change will alter what the land can do for us.
She also brought up another point that I found interesting. about how humans and increasing populations are putting further demands on our natural resources.
Climate change is one of many phenomena that are affecting wild plants and animals. And even if climate change just somehow magically stopped today, or emissions of greenhouse gases stopped increasing today, there are more and more people in the world. People are really good at making more people. As a result, resource consumption is going up and land use change is increasing. And so there is still loss of habitat for organisms worldwide and changes in their environment that sort of limit the options, limit the short-term and long-term options for a lot of wild plants and animals, some of which we as humans depend on quite a bit, and some of which, frankly, we don't, but we like having them out there. So again, it's one of many stressors, and people sometimes talk about the accumulated effects of all of those ways in which humans interact with their world. It's known that as there are more and more people and people want a good quality of life and use more resources, that resources are going to become, you know, in a general sense, more limiting. So in that sense, enough is known. If people choose to take action, enough is known to take action.
We started this episode with the idea that we would be making the case that climate change will affect everybody. We've touched on the broader topics of catastrophic forest fire and drought, and issues with land use.
But we also want to really take a look at something Professor Randy Bluffstone mentioned earlier. Climate change is an economic issue, especially when it comes to the stability of our natural resources.
Natural resource economics, it's a social science, science of humans. It focuses on humans in relation to the natural world, thinking about that natural world, what it does for humans.
And when we get into a discussion about how climate change is affecting industries as a whole, it is pretty apparent that the concerns and the need to adapt are widespread.
Give me a list of industries, and I'm guessing that 99% of them are going to be needing to adapt to climate change in some way. Industries will need to be creative, and people will need to change what they're accustomed to doing.
So we need to really drill down on this. We've been talking about the timber industry and agriculture. Let's start with timber. How is climate change changing the timber industry?
I asked that exact question to both Randy Bluffstone and Solomon Dabrowski.
How do you see climate change changing the way we actually use our forests, both as a resource and recreationally? Do you think that some of the industries that rely on forest lands are in trouble?
You know, our forests this year, last year, every year, the wildfire seasons in the West are getting worse and worse. So yes, timber, forestry in general, these are very climate-dependent industries, and natural resource-dependent. And so, of course, they're going to be more subject to the whims of climate change.
You know, interestingly, I think that the same trends that we've seen in the past may be accelerated by climate change increasingly. There has been a trajectory since basically the 1980s, reducing the amount of timber extraction on federal lands, early on driven by basically Endangered Species Act, particularly the spotted owl listing in the Pacific Northwest in particular. Increasingly, as climate changes, these places become hotter and drier, I think we're going to see potentially a shift in the way that we manage forests to try to actually affect fire behavior more so than support an industry.
And there it is again. Climate change may not be causing a specific problem. It is contributing to the acceleration and intensity of other issues.
And you heard the mention of the spotted owl there. We can't ignore the fact that they played a major role in changing how the timber industry operates, specifically here in the Pacific Northwest.
That's true, Kelly. And Erica Fleischman made it clear that while climate change is altering the timber industry, it's not the only factor forcing an evolution.
The timber industry was changing in the 80s. I mean, there were national and international economic forces, and I'm not an economist, but the nature of the industry was changing. And similarly, there have been changes in global markets and changes in agricultural ownership and in use of biocides and things like that. I mean, there were changes in those industries long before people were actively choosing to or forced to address climate change. So, I mean, climate change in many of these cases is an additional factor among many that are driving changes in these industries over time. So with respect to timber harvest, for example, I mean, climate change is changing the status of a lot of different trees that might be used for timber. It's changing other aspects of ecosystems, changing fire dynamics or contributing to changes in fire dynamics. But it's difficult in a lot of cases to say, oh, this is the one thing that's driving changes. It's one of a lot of different things that are going on.
The other industry we've been focusing on during this episode is agriculture. Listen to how Professor Bluffstone brought this part into focus.
So certainly agriculture, a lot of work being done on shifts in the kind of feasible zones. Some friends down at Berkeley showed that crop patterns in the Midwest that provide so much of the grain for the U.S., those regions are going to shift north substantially and really going to change. And there's going to be some areas that are not going to be able to farm anymore.
And Ian, we're not only talking about crops. You have to consider the people that are out in the elements doing these jobs.
Let's talk about those agricultural workers that, you know, are going to be working today in 100 and maybe 5, 6, maybe a more degree heat. Can be very, very dangerous. So any of these outdoor type of industries could be very strongly affected.
One of the things we haven't mentioned yet that came up a lot during the interviews for this episode focused on one of the natural resource industries under threat by climate change that I think is really worth paying attention to, and that's commercial fishing.
You know, kind of related to climate change and especially the acidification of the oceans, here in the Pacific Northwest, shellfish and other fisheries are being very heavily affected. These species are not adapted to acidic environments, but one of the consequences of putting all that CO2 in the atmosphere is it is acidifying the oceans, dissolving the shells of the shellfish. And so oyster farmers on the coast in Washington, Oregon, starting to have a hard time of it. Species that fish that migrate, thinking of trout, thinking of salmon, those species require cold water. Some of these streams that have been their habitat are getting too warm and they're having trouble with propagation, with breeding. Now here in Oregon, recreational fishermen are not allowed to fish after 2 o'clock because in many places too hot, need to give the fish a rest, they're under stress.
When we come back, you'll hear how our experts think natural resource-dependent industries can survive and thrive in the face of continued climate change.
Hello, Coin6 News anchor Emily Burris here. We know your mornings are busy, and we want to help you be in the know as you head out the door. That's why the Coin Podcast Network is bringing you a brand new podcast called The Daily Six. Every weekday, we'll bring you the day's 6 biggest headlines in a quick and concise report, on demand and on your schedule. So check out the Coin Podcast Network on coin.com or have The Daily Six sent directly to you each day by subscribing to the Coin Podcast Network on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Hi, this is Jeff Giannola from Coin6 News, and I'd like to invite you to watch Coin6 News at 10 on Portland CW, a full hour of the stories that are important to you and your family. See why more people are switching to Coin6 News at 10 on Portland CW.
Despite a lot of doom and gloom, when it comes to the dangers some of our very important industries are facing thanks to climate change, both Randy Bluffstone and Erica Fleischman are optimistic that the industries we've been talking about in this episode will survive.
I mean, agriculture as a whole is not going to collapse, but changes in climate may force some families or some producers to try other things. You know, if someone's land becomes too salty to farm, or if people's land, say, is flooded regularly and they can't deal with that, or if they invested heavily in a particular crop that no longer is feasible to grow in a particular area, their options as individuals or as small businesses may be limited. That doesn't mean that the industry as a whole is going to tank. You know, sure, we may not know exactly what's going to grow in the Willamette Valley 50 years from now. But we can say in a general sense, it's going to become warmer, it's going to become drier, storms are going to become more extreme. We know enough to inform action.
Humans and business we're an incredibly adaptable species. So I wouldn't be pessimistic on that. I think the key point is that anything that's traded in markets has value in the marketplace. That means prices are going to change. The price of timber, the price of agricultural commodities will adjust. And so those prices are going to rise and, you know, more profitable in the short run, and those industries will shift.
Are you saying that those changes because of climate change could drive the price of goods and services up?
Oh, without doubt. Yes, of course.
As we talked about in the first episode, at the end of each of the interviews we've done for this project, we've asked each of our experts what gives them hope. And as a way of wrapping up this second episode and the threat climate change poses to industry, I thought Erica Fleischman put it best.
I'm more optimistic about adaptation of natural systems in some cases than human systems, to kind of use a false but convenient dichotomy, especially if land use is not intensive. Ecosystems are going to change and species are going to change and all kinds of things are going to change. But I am more optimistic about the extent the natural world, if given half a chance, will be able to adapt than about what concerns me about levels of human suffering. In terms of will people have enough to eat? Generally speaking, I'm fairly optimistic about that. Will there be some people that are better able to feed themselves than others? Will there be some people who have been able to stay farming that wanted to stay farming and some people that couldn't? There's going to be a lot of probably the haves and the have-nots. Those differences very well might be exacerbated.
And that is a great way of setting up our next episode in our series, Climate in Crisis. Next week, we'll go from the rural agriculture and timber worlds of the present to the big cities of the future to see how the urban lifestyle is going to evolve and who is at most risk of being left behind.
Coin Podcast Network is your home for on-demand coverage of local news, sports, weather, and entertainment you won't find anywhere else. You can always find us on coin.com/podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.